The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Very big story right now. The latest round of talks between the United States and Iran have concluded. Special envoy Steve Witkoff and President Trump's son-in-law, Jared Kushner, reportedly, quote, disappointed by the morning session, according to reporting from Axios. Now, President Trump sending what he calls a huge armada of U.S. warships. It is the largest assembly of war power from the United States since before the Iraq War. Just take a look at what this looks like in terms of what these waterways are full of with American firepower right now. The president has warned that really bad things will happen. This is his warning to Iran if they don't cut a deal.
Well, I think what I'm looking at right now are a few things. First of all, the Gerald R. Ford Aircraft Carrier Strike Group, which everybody's been watching. It was in Ceuta Bay, Crete, getting resupply, getting munitions. It is now moving east toward Israel, and it will be in position off the coast of Israel tomorrow. Then we also have the F-22s. The F-22s, another squadron, was moved on Tuesday from Lakenheath in the UK to Israel. It's the first time F-22s have ever been based in Israel, and it suggests that that is a location that they would be safer than if they were at other locations across the Gulf, where typically the U.S. would keep its warplanes. So there is a positioning of assets so that if the president takes a decision following these talks, a decision that the talks have failed, then there would be a massive air and naval campaign that would likely target not only the three sites, nuclear sites that they targeted last summer, but also the IRGC.
It's the biggest buildup of naval assets in the Middle East since 2003 and the start of the Iraq War. The talks with Iran are not going well. I don't know how they could be. Whatever the result of talks with the Iranians are, it's never a good thing for the United States, as we've said on this show many times. You can't deal with these people. And the latest round sounds like it has been a failure. There will be one more, another round of talks in Geneva, I think starting next week, where the mediators will basically bring Iran's decision to the U.S. representatives. Marco Rubio, he's heading over to Israel. The latest reports are that he's heading over there next week. And a deal, people are still unclear what this would actually mean. President Trump has said, no nuclear, get rid of the ballistic missiles. You can't fund the proxies. Basically, Iran can't be a regional power anymore, which it might agree to. They'll say whatever they need to say to buy time. I'm surprised at this point they haven't presented their moderate Rouhani like they did with the Obama administration back in 2015. Now, no matter what the president does here, it doesn't take away Iran's ability to push. This is what Iran does. They push. And anything short of the United States basically going in and occupying Iran means that it just creates another power vacuum that could be filled by an even more radical leader. Now, no ballistic missiles. This is a very vague, basically, what President Trump's plan is here. But there are a lot of commentators are saying you don't have a buildup like this if you don't intend to use it. And a lot of people are on edge saying that a massive attack is imminent. The USS Gerald Ford, as was mentioned there, it's the largest warship ever constructed. Many people thought that was on pace or on track to go through the Suez Canal and come up around to Iran. It looks like, and it sounds like, they're parking that right off the coast of Israel outside of Haifa. And I think the tactic there, as some people have said, is that they want to have that ship. They want to have these U.S. ships right tucked up on the coast of Israel, because that will make Iran think twice about sending ballistic missiles into Israel, because there's the risk that they could directly hit U.S. ships in the area. Again, a lot of details to go through that we'll cover on this show. We'll get into some other stories as we go through. Welcome back to the Trumpet Daily, by the way. I'm Sam Livingston. I'll be your host for today's show. Pardon my voice. The allergy season is in full swing here in Oklahoma, one of the top-ranked worst states for allergies, and it has hit a few of us pretty hard. So please bear with me through this. Hopefully it'll clear up as I keep going. You can email your comments to td@thetrumpet.com. Don't forget to subscribe to our Rumble channel and our YouTube channel as well. Israel is gearing up for war. I've had a few of the employees over there in Israel text me that they're hearing warplanes going or flying by. They've sent some videos of Ben-Gurion Airport, and it's filled with U.S. Refueling planes. And a lot of the bases that the United States stores its planes at, these bases that we're supposed to have a partnership with in Qatar, they've basically emptied those bases and moved a lot of those jets to Israel. And there are these pictures of Ben-Gurion Airport, which is a commercial airport, and it's filled with U.S. planes. It looks like a U.S. Air Force base. And again, this will be, if it does start, we've been talking about it for weeks, if it does begin, probably going to be a much longer than the 12-day war that we had last year. These refueling planes are, again, critical to any mission that these fighter jets are going to launch in Iran, because they can just circle. They don't have to come back to these air bases. They can just go and refuel in the sky and keep bombing throughout Iran. Here's a clip from Fox News talking about the warning that was issued by the U.S. Embassy in Israel, telling people, telling their staff that they need to get out of Israel as soon as possible. So everybody, again, is on high alert in one sense, but in another sense, Israelis just keep going on living as normal. This is clip six.
The New York Times, Victoria, is now reporting that the U.S. Embassy in Jerusalem has told its workers that they may leave Israel, and if they want to do so, they need to do it immediately. This is according to emails from Ambassador Mike Huckabee, and this has been made out of an abundance of caution. But the president gave a 10 to 15 day window for Iran to make a nuclear deal, and we are entering that window.
And what we're doing in Embassy Jerusalem, as we are also in Embassy Beirut, we're doing this also with the Fifth Fleet in Bahrain, is, you know, removing any non-essential personnel. So if the president does choose to take a military strike against Iran, they'll have the least number of American targets in the region. So that's just prudence. And, you know, the president has all the time in the world if he wants to take it. He has all the cards in his hand. What has been placed in the Middle East is unprecedented. And so if he does strike, he can do so with overwhelming force and, you know, really set back the Iranian regime.
It definitely does seem like they're set up to carry out a much longer campaign, and no doubt coming to the protection of Israel. Now, as I'll get to later on, Trump is being very wishy-washy here, and that is the problem that's gotten America into so many of these endless wars, or these wars where there's no clear objective. Commentators are saying that while Trump is putting everything in place so that it can prepare to help Israel, but they want Israel to strike first, and then when Israel gets hit, the United States will defend Israel. And again, there's just no clear goal on what the United States wants to achieve here. New York Post, Huckabee tells Israel embassy staff to leave today if they want to, as Iran talks stall. The State Department is letting non-essential personnel and the family members of diplomats at the U.S. Embassy in Israel leave the country as fears grow that war with Iran is imminent. Excuse me. In an email to staff at the Jerusalem mission Friday morning, Ambassador Huckabee warned that those wishing to depart the Jewish state should do so today. Focus on getting a seat to any place from which you can, then continue travel to D.C. But the first priority will be getting expeditiously out of the country. And they go on to say, we're not trying to create a panic. So we don't know what is going on here. I thought it was interesting. We're planning a trip to Israel in a few weeks. We're going to have an event there at our office in Jerusalem with Dinesh D'Souza. And we are inviting Ambassador Huckabee. We were corresponding with his schedulers just the other day. And then the next day they send this email that basically says, get out of here as quickly as you can. It seems like every time we try to do something in Israel, there is an event like this that comes up. I mean, it's been this way since the October 7 attacks over 2 years ago now. It's been difficult to accomplish things in Israel. Satan hates the work. He hates what we're trying to accomplish over there in Israel. Of course, there's that special hatred that he has for the Jews physically and above all spiritually, as we cover on this show. I'll talk about this anti-Israel movement in the United States that is really making this issue more complicated than it's ever been before. Israel could usually bank on, until Obama, it was pretty much every U.S. president is helpful to Israel to some degree. Then when Obama was in, clearly hated the Jewish state. And then there's the back and forth. Trump comes in and is like this savior to the state of Israel. Then you go back to Biden. Now it's Trump again, but it's this Trump where it's not clear what he wants because there's such a massive anti-Israel movement on the conservative right in the United States. And that makes Israel wonder, well, we can't trust anybody. How long can we rely on the United States? This might be the last time we can get their help. And their Bible prophecy says that they're going to turn to Germany. And they have already, in many ways, started working with Germany. Their submarines are German-made. They're selling their Arrow 3 defense system to Germany. They're integrating systems. Israel sees that it's losing support in the United States. Hosea 5 and verse 13 says, when Ephraim saw his sickness and Judah saw his wound, then Ephraim to the Assyrian and sent to King Jerob. So this prophecy, we talk about Judah's wound. It's that peace process, but also turning to Assyria, turning to Germany. In the Hosea booklet, it says, we have seen from Hosea 5 that Judah, this is modern day Israel, they've called themselves Israel, but they are the Jewish state or Judah. It says, Judah is mentioned several times in relation to Ephraim and the rest of Israel. Then it quotes verse 13. It says, the Hebrew reveals that both Ephraim, Britain, and Judah go to Assyria, go to Germany. We see this trend playing out. We see all of these trends coming together. It's very exciting. America, Britain, and Judah all turn to Germany. They put their trust in Germany. While at the same time, these nations are turning on one another. Zechariah 11, verse 14, I didn't put that in my notes. I'll just turn over there. Talks about this brotherhood between these nations. Zechariah 11, verse 14, then I cut asunder mine other staff, even bands, that I might break the brotherhood between Judah and Israel. And Mr. Fleury points out that that's primarily talking about a split in spiritual Israel or God's church. But he also notes that this applies physically. In the Zechariah booklet, he says, look again at Zechariah 11, verse 14, about breaking the brotherhood between Judah and Israel. Of course, that is spiritual in the context of the church, but I believe it may also apply on a physical level to America and the nation called Israel or biblical Judah today. So they're at each other. They've been allies for so long, and now it's breaking apart. And we see that fracture sort of happening here where Donald Trump is, again, there's so much strength here, but it's pretty wishy-washy. Israel doesn't know how long they can rely on the United States here. And then you see all of these things also lining up, all of these things just working together and leading to this Amos 7 confrontation where, as Mr. Fleury was telling us in the group chat this morning, You see all of this anti-Israel sentiment coming from Tucker, and they talk about how, well, Donald Trump isn't really making the decisions here. The Jews are controlling him, or they're conspiring against him. And you look at the language in Amos 7, and that's what Amaziah says to Jeroboam. They conspire against you. And then later on, it says, or Amaziah says to Amos, get out, go to Judah. Flee. If you like them so much, go be with them. There's this split. There's this division. Times of Israel talks about Tucker Carlson's interview with Ambassador Huckabee. I haven't watched the whole thing. It's about 3 hours long. And I frankly, it's hard to listen to Tucker Carlson. There's just not the points that he brings up. They're not substantial. And he's trying to just sow doubt and division. And even the way he talks, it's just hard to listen to him. And Huckabee could have been stronger in certain areas, but you see Tucker is going around. I mean, he's working on behalf of radical Islam, taking the talking points from Al Jazeera. J.D. Vance says, well, this is quoting the Times of Israel, U.S. President Vice President J.D. Vance says he's really glad conservative commentator Tucker Carlson interviewed U.S. Ambassador to Israel Mike Huckabee last week. I guess my takeaway is it's really a good conversation that's going to be necessary for the right, not just for the next couple years, but for long into the future. And Vance is seen as the successor to Donald Trump. And J.D. Vance frightens Europe. He frightens Israel because he's very much America needs to be isolated. America alone. Vance tells the Washington Post, just continuing with the rest of this article. Vance says, he admits he hasn't even watched the full thing, but he's just seen a couple of clips here and there. But it's an important conversation to have. How long should we support Israel? Why should Israel even exist? Again, like I mentioned, that language. And Amos 7 and verse 10 talks about how they've conspired against you. Amos 7:12 says, get away, go into the land of Judah. Mr. Fleury mentioned just how the way they're treating Huckabee right now, a lot of conservatives on the right are saying Huckabee needs to be kicked out. He's not representing America's interests. He loves Israel more than he loves America. It's really a big turning point for Israel. It's now or never. This might be the last chance that they have U.S. support. President Trump is in a very strange position, and he's put himself there because he listens to the crazies. He listens to the other side. He wants everybody to like him. I'll go back to that article that we quote often about how closely he wants to work with the Qataris, taking the Boeing 747 from them, working with terrorists in suits. President Trump, despite all of the crazy stuff Tucker has said, President Trump keeps the door open for him. Tucker Carlson has Donald Trump's ear. President Trump mentioned the other day that he had another meeting with the New York City mayor, Mamdani, another radical Islamist. And I'll just play the video here for you in a second, but Mamdani he's got these New York officials with him, and they say a prayer. I don't know what they're gearing up for or getting out to go and do, but they do a prayer to Allah. And these are not other Muslims. If this was a Christian politician and he got in this room and was having people pray, I mean, that would be politicized nonstop by the left. Well, separation of religion and state. But when it's the Muslim mayor of New York City, 25 years after 9/11, and they're praying like this. This is clip 9.
Family to all our city agencies. Allah and me, that happens. Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Thank you. Thank you.
I'll talk about 9/11 a little bit more, but the world is turning against Israel. The world, there's the Churchill statue in London. That was defaced again. It was constantly being had graffiti sprayed on it through the BLM protests. The anti-American, the anti-West BLM protests, the big scam. And now it's been defaced again. Someone spray painted on that statue, Zionist war criminal. And Churchill was a big reason that the nation of Israel was created. There was a comment on Twitter that said, in response to this picture of the Churchill statue being defaced, they said, it's crazy because I don't know whether this was done by radical leftists or people who listen to Tucker Carlson. They're on the same side. What unites people right now is hatred of Jews. It's bringing the left and right together like never before. And it's a terrifying moment for this world, because when they start doing that, just like in the lead up to World War II, people are losing their minds. And terrifying things happen when that starts. Things you wouldn't think are imaginable, but happened within the last century. You look at the concentration camps, look at what the Germans did to the Jews. How does the human mind get to that state? Well, you see the hatred they have, illogical, irrational. They work themselves up. Satan preys on those emotions, and it leads to concentration camps. Mr. Fleury, in that article, don't accept gifts from terrorists. He talks about Donald Trump working with these people, working with people like Tucker Carlson and Mamdani. He talks about taking this jet from the Qataris. The Qataris who fund Hamas. Mr. Fleury says, these terrorists are also liars who will flatter and say whatever is expedient to accomplish their aims. That's the blunt, cold truth of it. That's how you have to approach dealing with all of these people. They will say whatever you want to hear. And President Trump loves to be flattered. And Mamdani will flatter him. Tucker will flatter him. The Qataris will flatter him. The terrorists. Just look at the fruits. Look at what Hamas did. Why do we deal with them? Why talk to them? Mr. Fleury says, Proverbs 17, verse 4 warns, a wicked doer gives heed to false lips. We must not have anything to do with such people. Keep it very clear cut. Don't deal with them. And again, President Trump might strike Iran, but like Mr. Fleury's mentioned in previous shows, that needed to happen in 2001. We're far past that point. President Trump isn't going to commit to sending U.S. troops on the ground there. There's millions of IRGC officials or troops there, plenty of loyalists to the Ayatollah, plenty of radicals, and you can bomb them, and you can probably, if you don't go all the way and finish the job, which is what the United States has tended to do the last quarter century, limited warfare. Well, the last quarter century, since World War II, that's the way we fought wars. You pave the way for somebody more radical. Again, think back to Amos 7. How does that evil advisor get the president's ear? Well, look who the president brings around it. Look at the spiritual advisors that he has already. Mr. Fleury says, how could this happen? Referring to Amos 7 and that Amaziah type getting to Jeroboam. How will such a man get into leading President Trump spiritually? Where does Amaziah come from? In Amos 7, he just suddenly appears. It doesn't say how he gets there. I will tell you how he gets there. He gets there because these people are cooperating with and caving in to terrorists. That kind of activity gives Satan an open door. You see Tucker dealing with these people, working with them. Well, if you just keep talking, we'll have peace. You know, we all want the same thing. If we can all just get along. Mr. Fleury says, Trump's acceptance of that jet is moving in this direction. And I think that's the approach you have to what the left or what the right is doing, what Tucker and the people that support him are doing. The Qataris are giving an airplane to a man they know is vulnerable and is caving in. When you do things like this, Satan will not let you get away with it. There is no direct connection between the Qataris and this modern-day Amaziah, but the devil is behind them both. Trump has opened the door, and he is inviting satanic influence. That is what this is about. That's what we have to pay attention to. I don't know how Iran hasn't just said, all they have to do is say it, apparently, to win Trump over, and everybody comes and says, well, Trump is so strong. He's not Obama. He's much stronger. He's not going to be fooled into taking a deal. But nobody knows what Trump actually wants, and he's actually said himself, I just need the magic words. I just need them to say they won't go after a nuclear weapon. Notice this clip from his State of the Union. Again, how vague President Trump has been over what he actually wants here. This is from the State of the Union, the few comments that President Trump made about Iran. This is clip 8.
They've already developed missiles that can threaten Europe and our bases overseas, and they're working to build missiles that will soon reach the United States of America. After Midnight Hammer, they were warned to make no future attempts to rebuild their weapons program, and in particular, nuclear weapons. Yet they continue, they're starting it all over. We wiped it out, and they want to start all over again, and are at this moment again pursuing their sinister ambitions. We are in negotiations with them. They want to make a deal, but we haven't heard those secret words. We will never have a nuclear weapon. My preference is to solve this problem through diplomacy. But one thing is certain, I will never allow the world's number one sponsor of terror, which they are by far, to have a nuclear weapon. Can't let that happen. And no nation should ever doubt America's resolve.
We haven't heard those secret words. I guess that's, I don't know what's going to happen next week. I mean, if I was Iran and if I was the Ayatollah and those ships are being parked off of the coast, and you know that President Trump has attacked you before, it hasn't even been a year since the 12-day war, but why not just go and say it? I don't know. There's any number of ways this could play out here. But we know that this is all leading to this trigger to World War III. Like I said earlier, it's amazing seeing you've got Psalm 83, Daniel 11, there's the European superpower, and Iran again is pushing. And traditionally, the way the last 35 years have been since Mr. Flurry identified radical Islam in Iran as the king of the South, the United States has really paved the way for Iran going into Iraq and clearing it out, allowing all of those proxies to operate. President Trump said that they obliterated Iran's nuclear capabilities, and yet, not even a year later, we're back to, well, we want a deal. We want to negotiate. The Federal says, Trump said we obliterated Iran's nuclear program last June, so why are we about to go to war? A lot of these people, there's this two sides, you could say, that Trump is listening to right now. There's the Tom Cotton and the Lindsey Grahams who are saying, we need regime change. But even on their part, you look at it and say, okay, well, what happens after that? Iran is a huge country. Now, that doesn't mean you shouldn't confront them, but you could just be opening up an even bigger can of worms by causing this. And then there's the other side. There's the Tuckers who say, Stop listening to those conspiring Jews who are in your ear trying to get you to do things that aren't in your best interest. Lindsey Graham says, Iran is facing a Berlin Wall moment. History is watching us now. The next question, arguably most important, is where do we go from here? President Donald Trump has two lines in the water, a diplomatic line and a military line. While diplomatic negotiations are always worth pursuing within reason, my ultimate hope is that the regime change will be achieved. This will come about in one of two ways. Either the current regime changes its ways, which I find unlikely, or the Iranian people will take over once the regime falls. Again, that seems like pretty wishful thinking. oh, we'll just take them out and the people will take over. How big is the IRGC? I think it's like 4 or 5 million soldiers, loyalists to the Ayatollah. To those who resist regime change, Graham says, why do you wish to see this regime continue as it is? Of course, we've got to confront evil. But is the United States willing to go all the way and sever the head of the snake? This is a clip from, you're dealing with leaders who are, I mean, they're leading a suicide cult. This is what they want, is war. That's how they usher in the 12th Imam. And like Mr. Fleury said, you're dealing with people who will lie right to your face, will say whatever you want to hear so they can accomplish their ends. This is a clip from, I think, Tom Cotton. He's on Hannity's show. This is clip 10.
They've never agreed to anywhere, any place, any time, American inspectors anyway. I have zero confidence that their word is worth anything.
And remember, they believe for 47 years that they can't win a war, but they can win any negotiation.
What will they have in terms of military ability 6 months from now, a year from now? They're only going to continue. They have proven that over and over again.
Yes.
So...
Senator, yeah, Sean, the balance of power does not get better, and it's month after month. It does not get better.
Well said. It's going to get worse and worse. They are committed, you know, to destruction. Number one state sponsor of terror.
They're committed to destruction. Could easily be the United States does attack. Again, just speculating. And then it goes wrong. We don't want, this is too big of a commitment. We don't want to make that commitment, and then they leave. That's Israel's problem, Israel and Europe's problem. You'd see that. You see that bringing Psalm 83 and Daniel 11 right into focus. The other side, like I mentioned, that has Donald Trump's ear is this Tucker Carlson camp. This is an article by Lee Smith over at Tablet titled, "The Man Setting Fire to the GOP. Tucker Carlson stages a stunt at Ben Gurion Airport, flirts with anti-Semitic conspiracies, and still gets invited to lunch at the White House. The real question is why the president keeps indulging him." He writes in this, or he goes through all of the crazy things that Tucker has done the past few months. He says, "And yet Trump invited him to lunch at the White House two consecutive Fridays last month. The public message then, regardless of what the president may or may not have told him in private, is that the leader of the Republican Party still thinks Carlson is an important part of Team MAGA. What normal Trump voters hear is that what the White House means by unity is linking their fate and moral probity to the whimsies of a pathological liar with a large audience and a growing network of allied influencers like Megyn Kelly, Jeffrey Sachs, and Sean Ryan, among others, whose anti-Semitic conspiracy theories are weaponized to destroy the president and the party. And it is this, not a GOP civil war, that will indeed help the Democrats." Well, we've got to work together. That's the politically expedient thing to do. I've got to keep that wing of the party happy. You see, this is man's world, just trying to please everybody, instead of being able to do what is right. And that's the Jeroboam way as well. Try to make everybody happy to keep those followers, keep those adherents. Well, set up the altar in Bethel and Dan. This is Jeroboam, the first Jeroboam. Set them up so that they don't go back into Jerusalem, so I don't lose those adherents. Do what you've got to do. Set up whatever counterfeit you have to. Talk to whoever you need to retain power. Here's a soundbite from Lee Smith commenting on this article that he wrote and some of the things Tucker has done. Clip 11.
"The idea that Tucker Carlson gets to walk into the White House, that's it. The fact that the president will not stop that's what augments Carlson's power. There's been a lot of news recently about an interview Tucker Carlson conducted with the U.S. ambassador to Israel, Mike Huckabee. I thought it was a very bad idea to do the interview in the first place. He's a fanatical conspiracy theorist. So the idea that you're trying to talk sense to him about Jews in Israel, you can't win.
People in the United States are being called anti-Semites, including me.
Tucker Carlson is trying to drive American discourse in a very ugly direction, an anti-Semitic direction. Where is the president of the United States on this? Certainly the president sees what's happening. Now, I know that the White House, they believe that Tucker has an enormous audience and he's very influential. And I suspect that one of the things is they don't want to get into a public fight with him. I think it's a terrible mistake. What Carlson really wants to do is he wants to take over a very loud faction that's easy to mobilize and make political demands. What it means for the country sociologically is quite dark. To see a political faction organized around anti-Semitism, and that's what it is. It's organized around anti-Semitism. It's not just the party that the president should be looking out for. It's also the health of the country. It's up to the president of the United States to shape the discourse for Americans, especially for young Americans, and should be attentive to what's going into their minds, what they're watching, what they're viewing, what they're imbibing intellectually. And this right now is poison.
It's poison. That's what Mr. Armstrong said. It's like this drug that once you start on it, it just gets worse and worse. Once Tucker started in dabbling in a little bit of, oh, well, BB thinks this way. Oh, I'm just against the government of Israel. I'm not against Jews. I mean, I'm against them the way I would be against the Democrat president. I still love America, so it just kind of starts that way, and then it just keeps ballooning. And now we've got, I mean, the stuff that he will say is, it's abhorrent. It's an ugly, ugly thing. Anti-Semitism rising. It's preceding World War III. You can't work with that sort of evil. Look back at those prophecies. Request those booklets if you haven't. Zechariah 11 about this betrayal. Hosea 5:13 about turning to Germany. Amos 7 about the Jeroboam regime. I thought I'd comment on this story that Mr. Palmer wrote about in the morning brief. Hosea 7 and verse 11, another prophecy in Hosea, talks about Britain being a silly dove. It says, Ephraim also is like a silly dove without heart. They call to Egypt, they go to Assyria. And you can see by the way these nations behave today that proves their identity in Bible prophecy, among many other things. But it's Britain that behaves like a silly dove. We'll just let everybody in, and multiculturalism makes us so strong, and it will bring peace. There's just so much love. And then their nation is being conquered by Islam at this point. Right now, the focus is on Islam. It's a silly dove decision to bring in an anti-Western culture like this. But then look at the rest of Europe, and the backlash against Islam is starting. And the backlash is, well, return to our Catholic heritage. Return to the Holy Roman Empire. That's how to combat it. And like Bible prophecy says, Islam's bad, but what you're turning to is even worse. Our nations will go to anything except turning to God for help. So you can see where Britain, well, they look at the Holy Roman Empire. Hey, you're solving the Islam problem. We've got that problem too. Talking about this Islam problem, this district in the United Kingdom, they elected a member of the Greens or the Green Party. So this is, it's not Labour. It's not conservative, but this Green Party is as radical as it gets. Mr. Palmer says, Gorton and Denton in Manchester, this is where they won this election, has a large population of Muslims, and the Green Party aggressively pursued their votes. Party activists said they believe that Zionism is a racist ideology and that the state of Israel should be replaced by a single Palestinian state. Now, it's not like Labour Party doesn't have their Muslim extremists, but this party has won a seat over Labour. This district was predominantly run by Labour, but now you've got this even more radical party getting a victory here. Mr. Palmer says this strategy, again, this was a strategy, a successful strategy for winning in Manchester. It's a scandal, wrote the Telegraph's Alistair Heath. Extreme tribalism of the sort promoted by the Greens is incompatible with a democratic culture that requires a strong sense of commonality, a belief in a peoplehood that transcends differences of ideology, race, religion, or class. We are balkanizing our country, moving beyond citizenship as our primary political identifier, instead relating to one another as members of antagonistic tribes whose territories happen to overlap. That's the way the Middle East operates. That's the way it is all throughout that region, and you've invited it right in. Melanie Phillips writes, chickens coming home to roost. Britain has woken up to a victory by the Greens in the Gorton and Denton by-election. The Greens' Hannah Spencer, a 34-year-old plumber, now becomes the Member of Parliament for the constituency, which has been Labour since 1931. Labour was pushed into third place, with Reform coming second. They talk about just corruption in the election and how the Muslim community votes. Melanie says, Britain is now facing a red, black, green alliance. The left, the Muslims, and the revolutionary, West-hating, Zion-phobic Greens versus Reform and the Conservatives, who are trying to destroy each other, and thus risk wiping out in the process the defense of Britain and the West. It's what might reasonably be thought a cultural and political emergency, otherwise known as chickens coming home to roost with a bang. This is silly dove Britain. And the confrontation with Islam, like I mentioned, that'll be there. But they turn to Assyria. They turn to Germany. And Bible prophecy says that's the bigger problem. Shifting gears a little bit back to the United States, Mr. Palmer commented on the U.S. debt yesterday and just what a massive vulnerability that is, but how Germany is preparing to create a bond market that would challenge the United States. I mean, people are investing in war. That bond market is, we'll buy these up, and when the war happens, you're going to make all this money off of them. Or the defense industry, as that booms, you profit off of it. Those war bonds, I mean, throughout history, those things can cause empires to rise and fall. And Germany wants its own. But the U.S. debt, like we've said for decades, is the biggest threat that America faces. This article in the Wall Street Journal, it's titled America's Bills Will Come Due. And that bond market that Germany is creating, like Mr. Palmer talked about, is being created to rival the United States. Another prophecy that we've talked about, the Isaiah 23 Mart of Nations, and Germany working with China, creating this bloc that will kick the United States out, or that the United States will be on the outside of, this economic siege. But America is self-inflicted in so many ways because we're just out of control. There's no morality in any sector of society. There's no control anywhere. This article, Wall Street Journal, America's bills will come due as the federal debt keeps ballooning. Options are narrowing to avert a crisis. We've run out of options to kick the can down the road. No more quantitative easing, inflation. We've just run out of solutions. This debt, the interest payments exceed now the defense budget. And a lot of commentators or historians will say that's the marker of the end of an empire. The cost to service the debt outpacing defense spending. This article says the first law of holes, when you're in one, stop digging. The Trump administration didn't get this memo. For as much as they talk about being conservative, nobody has the political will to say stop spending because it's unpopular, because our nation is addicted to debt from head to toe. They're addicted to debt. Mr. Fleury talked about the credit card crisis and how credit card debt is skyrocketing. I was going to comment a little bit more about it. Maybe it'll be for a future segment, but just how much sports gambling there is in the United States, how that just dominates everything when it comes to sports commentary. just blowing away money all the time on sports. Our nation's addicted to gambling. From head to toe, there is sickness. This article points out how if this doesn't get under control, we're looking at a deficit that is over $3 trillion within the next few years. That would mean just something like we're spending $7 trillion but making $4 trillion. It's crazy. You could go ahead and play these two clips together, the Bartiromo interview. This is clip one and two.
The greatest threat we have is our debt. Greater than China, everything is our debt. We're putting ourselves in a very bad position.
But Senator, you've been focused so much on spending declining and trying to get our arms around $38 trillion in debt. What are the plans? What can you look to as actually solid solutions to actually lower spending?
Well, again, I'm an accountant, so I look at this probably differently than most people here in Washington, D.C. But if you take a look at what we spent in 2019, okay, prior to the pandemic, we spent $4.4 trillion, and now we're going to spend about $7.4 trillion. But if you just take that $4.4 trillion, increase it by Joe Biden's 40-year high inflation and population growth, we'd be spending about $600 billion less than we're scheduled to spend right now. So you just go category by category. By the way, that exempts Social Security and Medicare and interest from that calculation. You spend what you need to spend for 2026, but look at every other spending category and just use that basic control. What we spent in 2019, we weren't spending too little back then, and we'd literally save about $6 trillion over the next 10 years. Mm. You really want to get aggressive, go back to Obama in 2014 or Clinton in 1998, we'd be saving $10 trillion plus. So again, I know it's a green eye shade way of doing this, but that's what you need. These are numbers. You have to look at the numbers.
He's saying just go back to 2019. And that wasn't even good. The spending has been out of control for decades, but it's ramped up. It's completely out of control. He's just saying go back to 2019. Go back to pre-COVID. But everybody gets addicted to the checks. There's all the Medicaid and Medicare fraud. This nation is just it cannot be repaired. It can't be fixed. And this author, this Wall Street Journal article, goes through a few things the United States could do to try to fix it. But again, like going right back to that story about Iran, is there the will to do it? Is there the will to just simply do what's right? This next clip, this is from Anthony Scaramucci. Not a huge fan of him, but a lot of these anti-Trump guys, you find yourself agreeing with them. They're totally off. Everybody's totally off. There's a right and a wrong way. And once in a while, they'll say a few things that are right. And his comments on the economy, these are pretty right. This is clip 13.
And the CBO, something you're very familiar with from your time working in Washington, is saying that by 2036, which is not a long time from now, 10 years, Michael, national debt of the United States is going to be $56 trillion, according to the Congressional Budget Office. So that's going to be north of 125% of the GDP. What say you as we're hitting a $3 trillion budget deficit, operating deficit by 2036?
You know, there's a thing called the Minsky moment where confidence just evaporates. You don't know where it is, and then it happens. You know, at one point, the bond market says, I'm not going to finance that deficit. At one point, your foreign friends say, I'm not going to finance that deficit. This dance can go on a lot longer than we think it can, but there's a breaking point somewhere. And when it breaks, lo and behold, it gets really ugly.
When I talk to these public servants about the deficit, they look at me like, yeah, you know, deficits don't matter. We can continue on this deficit chain forever. Do you get that feeling from our public servants when you talk to them? Or you have any that are like, wow, you know, we should be worried about the stuff that I'm talking about?
There's a lot of people that get it, that know we got to get our fiscal house in order. They also all recognize, like Scott Bessent gets it. And even though he gets it 100%, you just look at how hard the politics of it are until we get a shift in mindset on both the Republicans, because the Republicans talk a big game of it and don't do shit. And the Democrats don't even talk that game. We need a shift of mindset and saying, hey, we have all these tools. We need to do more with less at a government level. And it's just not in how politicians think. They like to spend.
It just comes out of nowhere, what he said there, the Minsky moment where confidence just evaporates. Well, what happens when no one wants to lend to you anymore? I think about that. I was looking at, well, what if I just bought bonds or do this as an investment? And you don't trust the government to be able to repay them. Or the interest rates start to get too, well, I don't remember exactly how all of that works, but you just lose trust, you lose confidence, and then you can't get more money. I mean, a lot of the debt, and there's a lot that's held by foreign nations, but a lot of it is just held by U.S. institutions and U.S. citizens. And that confidence just disappears. And he says there, politicians, they just like to spend. And it can't keep going on like this. This Wall Street Journal article says, the last time the U.S. had a balanced federal budget was 25 years ago. Since then, presidents and lawmakers of both parties have acted without regard for the country's long-term fiscal health. Just spend now, pay later, worry about it later. I thought that was interesting. 25 years ago, 2001, you get September 11th in the last hour, and it changed everything. Everything changed that year. You can request a free copy of The Last Hour if you haven't read that. Mr. Fleury says, God began to reveal this truth about The Last Hour to the Philadelphia Church of God on May 5th, 2001. Approximately 4 months later came the September 11 terrorist attacks on the United States. And you look at these forever wars that the United States got into, and it ties back into the Iran story. They wouldn't go after the head of the snake. There was no clear goal. It was a war on terrorism. The enemy wasn't clearly defined. And the debt has just been accumulating ever since. Mr. Fleury says, I believe God allowed us to receive this physical sign that we had entered the last hour. The worst terrorist attack ever on American soil powerfully reinforced our new revelation about the last hour. You look at the story of Mamdani praying. A Muslim mayor in New York City, 25 years after 9/11. There's so much packed into here. Even at that point, going back to 2011, thinking about the PCG court case over Mystery of the Ages, looking back at what was happening in Britain and the United States. Anyway, I've run out of time. This Wall Street Journal article just concludes, as the late economist and presidential advisor Herb Stein famously said, if something cannot go on forever, it will stop. It will stop. The United States cannot continue down this path. Like I said, if you haven't requested The Last Hour, it's a great book to read. The anniversary of that is coming up in a couple of months. I have to leave some time. I think I've gone a little bit over. The World Watch is about 3 or 4 minutes, so we can segue into that. Thank you very much for joining us on the Trumpet Daily. Again, send your comments to td@thetrumpet.com. Have a great weekend, and we will see you again on Monday.
Iran closed the Strait of Hormuz for several hours on February 17th as its Islamic Revolutionary Guard Corps performed live-fire naval exercises. The move shows Iran's fearlessness in the face of America sending more than 50 fighter jets to the region, in addition to about 180 fighters on two aircraft carrier strike groups in the Arabian Sea and the Mediterranean Sea. This strait, only 21 miles at its narrowest, connects the Persian Gulf to the Indian Ocean and the wider world. A long-term closure would be catastrophic for the global economy, leading to astronomically high energy prices. More than 80% of Middle Eastern oil and natural gas exports transit this passage. Most Middle Eastern economies, including Iran, rely heavily on free passage through the strait. Daniel 11 verse 40 describes an end-time power bloc called the King of the South, or Radical Islam led by Iran, pushing at the King of the North, or a United Europe, and provoking a global conflict. To learn more about this prophecy and how it may be fulfilled, request our free booklet, The King of the South. As powers including Iran, Russia, and China race for influence in Africa, several recent news stories show how Europe is pushing back. On February 17th, France and Algeria agreed to resume security cooperation. Italian Prime Minister Giorgia Meloni visited Ethiopia for the second Italy-Africa summit on February 13th. In January, German companies launched 5 new partnerships with East African companies with the goal of boosting cooperation. Also in January, German Foreign Minister Johann Wadephul made his first trip to Africa. Africa's natural resources and proximity to the Mediterranean and Red Seas make it a prime target for imperialistic powers. The Bible prophesies of a coming military clash between Europe and Iran and shows that Africa will be a major factor in this war. Based on this prophecy, Trumpet editor-in-chief Gerald Flurry warned we would soon see a scramble for African dominance from these two blocs. To learn more, read Mr. Flurry's 2013 article, Watch Algeria. On February 17th, Canadian Prime Minister Mark Carney confirmed that he is spearheading discussions to connect the European Union to the Comprehensive and Progressive Agreement for Trans-Pacific Partnership. The CPTPP is a 2018 trade agreement between Australia, Brunei, Canada, Chile, Japan, Malaysia, Mexico, New Zealand, Peru, Singapore, the United Kingdom, and Vietnam. It has been correctly described as an anti-Trump and anti-US trade bloc. Positioning Canada as a bridge between this bloc and the EU would connect a massive trade zone encompassing 1.5 billion people and around a third of the entire globe's GDP. Responding to questions from reporters about a Politico report published on February 12th, Carney said that Canada, which is a member of the trade bloc and has a trade agreement with the EU, is in a unique political and geographic position for brokering an economic alliance between Europe and the Indo-Pacific. Bible prophecies in Deuteronomy 28, Isaiah 23, and Ezekiel 27 indicate that Europe will indeed establish economic alliances with many Asian nations to economically besiege North America. In a tragic irony, Canada will be one of the victims of the siege. To learn more, read our Trends article, Why the Trumpet Watches the Development of a Massive Anti-American Trade Bloc. To learn more about current world news and how it relates to Bible prophecy, please visit thetrumpet.com.